incessant struggle against the manifestations of oppression and arrogance, the US, the Israeli regime, and their lackeys and minions across the world.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
France continues to be at the forefront of the West's effort to whitewash Saudi autocrat Mohammed bin Salman, who even Western leaders believe was behind the brutal murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi in 2018. After the murder, French President Emmanuel Macron was the first Western leader to visit the House of Saud last December, and now he has rolled out the red carpet for the Crown Prince's first visit to Europe. Human rights groups and leftist politicians strongly criticized Macron's decision, just as they criticized his legitimizing embrace in 2020 of Libyan warlord Khalifa Haftar and Egyptian military dictator Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, as well as Macron's enormous arms sales to Arab monarchs for their brutal war against Yemen. Already tenuous claims to support human rights in the Middle East have become increasingly irrelevant to Western leaders as their sanctions campaign against Russia has dramatically backfired against their own economies. Energy prices have soared in Europe, causing record inflation, and energy outages loom this winter. At the beginning of the year, France's annual economic growth rate was expected to be 4%. The government has already slashed that prediction almost in half, and it could fall even further.
The great revolution linked to Ukraine and the Russian sanctions is that if you're a purchaser of oil instead of a producer of oil, then you're going to view bilateral relations in a strictly economic manner in order to ensure your future supplies. This is going to change relations with many countries, such as Saudi Arabia, Morocco, Algeria, the UAE, and others.
Just a week ago, Macron received the head of the United Arab Emirates, signing a strategic agreement to cooperate in the energy sector. The Paris visit by the de facto Saudi ruler comes 2 weeks after a visit to Riyadh by United States President Joe Biden, who backtracked on his promise to make Saudi Arabia a pariah state because of the Khashoggi murder.
When it comes to the level of output, only Saudi Arabia has the ability to raise oil and gas production. Europe cannot turn to Russia anymore, and nor can they reliably turn to the US, where fracked shale gas has been a total failure. In a global climate of recession and inflation, we see no hesitation to protect energy deliveries.
Analysts say that the West is calling in their longtime support of brutal absolute monarchies and dictatorships in the Middle East, demanding that they direct their oil and gas supplies towards Europe amid the unrest in Ukraine. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Up to a quarter of the EU's electricity demand is generated using gas. In some of the bloc's member states, it is higher. As less of it arrives from Russia, EU nations have agreed to reduce gas consumption by 15% until spring.
I think at the end, everybody understands that this Sacrifice is necessary. We have to and we will share the pain.
Many in the European Parliament say the pain is not being shared equally.
Only working class people are dying. But the EU has done nothing to stop us. And so many people in here are glad the war has taken place.
Within NATO, there is opposition to Finland and Sweden joining the military alliance. Within the EU, there is opposition to the bloc's foreign policy towards Russia. There are also tensions between the EU and the UK. At present, it appears diplomacy in the West simply isn't working. Trust between allies is at an all-time low. How this will all play out is anybody's guess. It has been suggested that Russia wants Western allies to fall out.
Now is not the time for finger-pointing. We understand that they want to destroy, they want to divide, they want to split this solidarity and unity.
Critics say the West is responsible for the war in Ukraine because Russia's security concerns were ignored and even preyed upon. Experts suggest the conflict has highlighted the EU's weaknesses and has exposed the lack of energy infrastructure investment within the bloc.
That is why investing in grids, in interconnectors, in something as boring as pipelines, that matters.
Ordinary people in the EU are asking, how did we get to this point? There is a cost of living crisis and all sorts of security concerns. Analysts warn there will be political ramifications. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
South Korea will soon resume large-scale military exercises with the United States. Seoul's recently appointed foreign minister Wednesday met with the foreign press and explained the importance of the U.S. alliance and the drills.
We expect that the Ministry of National Defense will resume training to maintain the South Korea-U.S. combined defense capabilities so that South Korea's security can be maintained.
The South Korean envoy placed the responsibility for subsequent military tension on North Korea.
North Korea's nuclear and missile development and provocations are the most important causes of tension on the Korean Peninsula.
North Korea recently resumed ballistic missile testing after a self-imposed moratorium aimed at negotiating a lifting of U.S.-led sanctions, which remain in effect. Meanwhile, South Korea's further developed and tested missile technology and deployed several advanced U.S. weapon systems, raising concern in Pyongyang.
The U.S. and its allies are increasing their military pressure on our republic. All this is raising serious concern that the ravages of the war 72 years ago could be repeated here. Our measures to build up national defense capabilities are the legitimate and righteous exercise of our sovereignty to defend our national security and territory against military threats.
South Korea said this year's drills will include 11 field exercises, amphibious operations, and an air carrier strike group. South Korean officials have said the joint military exercises with the U.S. will begin on August 22nd, and for the first time since 2018, include field training. As new South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol pivots to a hardline approach to Pyongyang, inter-Korean ties appear destined for greater tension. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Another day, another railway strike, bringing half of Britain's rail network to a grinding halt. Organized by the Rail, Maritime and Transport Workers Union, the 24-hour industrial action has seen more than 40,000 railway workers walk out in a row over job security and pay at a time of soaring inflation. Any hope of an 11th-hour settlement has now been all but dashed.
We're just outside one of the busiest train stations in London, where members of the RMT union have formed a picket line demanding a fair deal. And they're saying if there isn't a negotiated settlement soon, there will be more walkouts in the weeks ahead.
Those words echoed by the head of the RMT union, that industrial action is the way forward.
I can't think of a way at the moment because we've been negotiating for 2 years. But it would be interesting if me and Grant Shapps went head to head. We could see how we got on with that, if that's not too flippant.
Grant Shapps is the transport secretary. Under him, the rail network and the subway have seen billions of dollars in cuts and offered below-inflation pay rises, described by the strikers as paltry. As widespread as the disruption is support for the railway workers. Today, the strikers found Britain's shadow transport secretary joining the picket line in central London.
When Grant Shapps and Liz Truss come on the telly and say to you that it's someone else's fault, it's the striking rail workers' fault that this dispute is happening, what a load of nonsense. The Trade Union Congress had a legal opinion just a few weeks ago that showed definitively that it is the government who are agitating for this dispute. And it needs to be resolved. It needs to be resolved fairly and justly and quickly for the sake of the travelling public.
The travellers, too, want the dispute resolved quickly.
I love the railway. I love to travel by train. I want to keep doing it. And I don't want to keep thinking, oh, God, is it going to be, you know, unreliable?
Well, I totally get why they're striking. Obviously, it's an inconvenience for me, but I'm willing to make an exception.
There are more railway walkouts planned for the coming weeks. There are also reports of unrest among teaching staff and National Health Service employees. More disquiet is on the horizon as Britain awaits a new prime minister. Saeed Purza, London.
Dismissed us and it has cost taxpayers 70.
After the warm-up bouts of debates featuring multiple leadership candidates, it was time for the final two to square off in a live televised debate. The head-to-head was the first opportunity viewers, including the estimated 170,000 members of the Conservative Party eligible to vote in the leadership race, could see Liz Truss, Foreign Secretary, face off against former Chancellor Rishi Sunak. Each wasted little time attacking each other's records and credentials and clashed heavily on their individual taxation plans to bring the country out of its worst cost of living crisis in generations.
We are an outlier. Everybody understands that COVID is a 1-in-100-year event and trying to pay it back straight away so quickly that we actually damage our economy, that we end up causing a recession, that we end up in people being out of work, and that hard-working taxpayers who do the right thing have seen their taxes rise, despite the fact that we promised in our manifesto
You just mentioned three countries. Do you know what mortgage rates are in the US at the moment? Do you want to use them as an example? Their mortgage rates are almost 50% higher than mortgage rates in this country because they're borrowing so much.
Canada actually has project fear.
The candidates vying for the country's top job have not shied away from going after each other's political juggler. Some of the exchanges have been brutal, with the former chancellor accused of talking down to his political rival, while Liz Truss has honed in on Rishi Sunak's immense wealth. Now, Tory grandees are fearful that whoever wins this vote, it's actually the Tory party with all of this mudslinging that will be the eventual loser. Former Mayor of London Ken Livingstone has been keenly observing the leadership race. Polls have Rishi Sunak trailing Liz Truss amongst rank-and-file Tory members, and with ballot papers being sent out in early August, both candidates want to build momentum. The results of the leadership ballot will be revealed on September the 5th, still years ahead of a general election that will see the nation have the final say. Amina Taylor, London.
A UK-based Israeli arms manufacturer has been raided once again by Palestine supporters, who claim to have inflicted significant damage on the property. The building belonging to UAV Engines was hit last Sunday as part of a wider campaign by Palestine Action activists to harass and hamper the activities of the international arms firm Elbit Systems.
Palestine Action claim that their latest direct action was in retaliation to Israeli regime attacks on the Palestinian city of Nablus in the West Bank on Sunday morning, killing at least two Palestinians and injuring many more. The group also vows that as long as Israeli aggression against Palestine continues, so will their campaign, targeting not just Israeli arms manufacturers in the UK, but also their partners as well.
Following Sunday's action, supporters gathered to protest outside UAV's gates in solidarity with the activists who were detained following the direct action.
The drone parts that are made here are used, are tested on the captive population of Gaza. We know that these drones have killed people, and we're here today to stop the arms trade overall, but specifically against Elbit.
Palestine Action have always said, if you continue with this violence against the Palestinian people, then we will retaliate, we will resist, we will come back, we will shut down your factories.
The attack by Israel on Nablus is a common occurrence across occupied Palestine. The lack of action by Western powers to rein in Israeli aggression has inspired more aggressive activism. Palestine Action say their relentless raids have successfully forced the closure of two Elbit sites in London and Oldham. A spokesperson for Elbit acknowledged the incident, claiming it was an attack by a violent group. Although no one was harmed during the raid, Palestine Action's sights remain squarely fixed on UAV engines, so locals can expect more of the same scenes going forward. Robert Carter, Shenstone.
Several days ahead of the lunar month of Muharram, people in Afghanistan are preparing to mark the martyrdom anniversary of the third Shia Imam and grandson of the Prophet Muhammad, Imam Hussein. On Kabul streets, people have held Muharram exhibitions, where they provide necessities for mourning rituals.
We have been holding such Muharram affairs for more than 20 years. We deploy necessities for mourning ceremonies across Afghanistan. However, Muharram always has its own prosperity, but this year it is very different for our people. As we see, people are set to mark a widespread and more passionate Muharram.
Afghans also turned the mosques and public religious places black to express the emotion of grief on the martyrdom anniversary of their third Imam.
We are preparing to hold Muharram mourning ceremonies in Abul Fazl Shrine. The servants and lovers of Imam Hussein are decorating here with black as an old Afghan religious culture. God willing, we will host a sizable population of mourners during Muharram days, especially in Ashura.
With the Taliban responsible for ensuring security, Afghan Muslims, especially Shias, hope that they can hold their festivities in a peaceful space.
As you know, in the past years, there were security threats, especially by the Daesh terrorist group. Now that the invasion has ended and the Taliban are in power, I hope they tighten the security in advance and provide a safe ground for Muharram mourners across the country. They should cooperate and engage with the people and mourners to foil evil schemes.
Muslims around the globe largely commemorate the Battle of Karbala to keep the spirit of resistance and fight against arrogance alive. They also honor Imam Hussein's sacrifices, renewing allegiance with his ideals. Every year, millions of people in Afghanistan passionately mourn the martyrdom of Imam Hussein during the month of Muharram. Now here in the capital city of Kabul, preparations are underway for large processions. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The global stage for talents. The 5th International Stage Stars Festival wrapped up with the announcement of winners, who have been competing in 4 categories of singing, voice acting, show hosting, and sound impression. The top performances from each category won the golden mic and a cash prize.
The festival was a place for more serious competition between those who have a say in a stage performance. I'm so happy to be chosen by the jury as the best show host of the contest.
It was an amazing event for talents. I'm so glad to be part of this. Talents from all across Iran and many parts of the world competed in the festival, so winners should be proud of themselves.
Held in Iran's city of Rafsanjan, the 2-day event brought together participants from 14 countries, including Iran, Afghanistan, Kyrgyzstan, Nigeria, and Turkey, to flaunt their knack for stage performance.
The scale of this contest is global. Many of us participants did not have any idea we could be stand-up comedians or show hosts. But when we got on stage here, we ourselves discovered our own talents.
I really love that, seeing that all people around the world are coming here and presenting themselves. It's a very great feeling. Of course, they will be progressed and they will develop yourself when they will got the result.
The jury is comprised of top Iranian actors, TV presenters, and voice artists. They say the competition has been tough, and those who stood out are real stage stars.
We tried our best to pick talents who really acted like professionals on stage. Not only should they care about the standards and principles of a stage performance, but they must innovate, improvise, and stand out.
This festival acted like a university for stage talents. It taught a lot of lessons about the stage to participants, especially for those who failed to win the contest.
Organizers say this contest is not just about scouting for stage talents. They say the event helps shine a spotlight on talents and lead them to their community.
The fifth Stage Stars Festival is aimed at bringing stage talents to light. Many of the participants already have a few years of experience, so this stage is not supposed to discover them, but to springboard them to a higher level in their careers.
All of the contestants, even those who come from foreign countries, must perform in Persian. However, organizers plan to include other languages in the upcoming editions of the festival.
To those who won the golden mic here, this is a dream come true. But they say, aside from the prize, Stage Stars has marked a milestone in their pursuit of success, since they have now come under the spotlight. Yusuf Jalali from the city of Rafsanjan.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Research published recently warns that forever chemicals used in everyday products could lead to tens of billions of dollars in medical costs in the United States, globally infamous for its for-profit healthcare system. Stay with us for an article in this regard written by Jessica Corbett, journalist. This article is published under the heading Study Ties, Forever Chemicals, Exposure to Billions in U.S. Health Costs. Stay tuned for more. Research published recently warns that forever chemicals used in everyday products could lead to tens of billions of dollars in medical costs in the United States, globally infamous for its for-profit healthcare system. The new study, published online in the journal Exposure and Health, focuses on per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, or PFAS, a class of over 4,700 manufactured chemicals that persist in the human body and environment for long periods. Because of their use in everything from firefighting foam to food packaging to furniture, the substances have been found in drinking water, soil, and people across the U.S. The researchers, led by Vladislav Obeskov of the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, calculated how many Americans were likely exposed to PFAS in 2018 using blood samples from the U.S. National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, then examined the studies from the past decade of diseases tied to the chemicals. PFAS have been connected to various health issues, including multiple types of cancer, childhood obesity, and damage to immune and reproductive systems. The study estimates the economic burden of 13 medical conditions that may result from daily PFAS exposure. Our findings add to the substantial and still mounting body of evidence suggesting that exposure to PFAS is harming our health and undermining the economy, said study co-author Linda G. Kahn, an assistant professor at New York University Langone Health, in a statement. The researchers determined that 13 conditions potentially resulting from PFAS exposure could cost Americans $5.5 billion to $63 billion over the lifetime of the current population. Among the five conditions with the strongest connections to the chemicals, the biggest contributors to the economic toll were childhood obesity followed by hypothyroidism in women. Dr. Leonardo Trasande, another co-author and NYU Langone professor, said that our results strongly support the recent decision by the Environmental Protection Agency to lower the safe, allowable level of these substances in water. The federal agency last month took what green groups called baby steps on drinking water contamination by common PFAS, issuing four health advisories to lowering the levels for PFOA and PFOS, and two, establishing new guidance for Gen X and PFBS. Consumer Reports senior staff scientist Michael Hansen said at the time that EPA's move is a major victory for science and represents an important first step to ensure everyone has access to safe drinking water, but also called on the agency to adopt legally binding standards. Alongside the new advisories in June, EPA Administrator Michael Regan announced a new grant program to invest $1 billion to reduce PFAS and other contaminants in drinking water. Based on our estimates, the cost of eradicating contamination and replacing this class of chemical with safer alternatives is ultimately justified when considering the tremendous economic and medical risks of allowing them to persist in the environment. Trasande said recently, adding that his research team now plans to study the long-term risks of PFAS in U.S.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. Official figures show Eurozone inflation has soared to an all-time high, hitting a new record in July. This comes as the entire European Union is currently facing a hike in energy prices. EU statistics agency Eurostat says that Eurozone inflation has climbed to 8.9% in the month of July. That's while the fight against rising prices has raised fears of a recession. Meanwhile, Europe's largest economy, Germany, has experienced a period of stagnation this year, showing 0% growth in the second quarter of 2022. The global supply chain problems and the fallout of the Ukraine war are among the main contributors to the economic hardships across the Eurozone. Meanwhile, the entire EU has run into difficulties with its energy demands amid the face-off with Russia, which has resulted in a hike in gas prices. Joining us on tonight's Spotlight, we have Professor of Economics at Metropolitan Autonomous University, Mr. David Barkin, who's joining us from Mexico City, and Independent International Affairs Analyst Gilbert Doctorow, joining us from Brussels.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Barkin in Mexico City. Why do the inflation numbers keep climbing and climbing in the Eurozone?
I think there are two reasons for that. One of them is the cost, the energy costs that are perhaps related to the conflict in the Ukraine and the cutting off or the reduction of the gas supplies. But the other is that some of the large international corporations are taking advantage of this by raising prices and increasing their profit rates in an extraordinary effort to really take advantage in a socially unacceptable way for of the present conjuncture. As a result, what we have is a combination of, yes, supply problems on the gas area, where Europe has been particularly vulnerable because it made a shift from other kinds of petroleum products to the gas. But the other, and I think that we can't underestimate the importance of the way in which profit rates are increasing at a tremendous rate at this particular moment in time.
Mr. Doctorow, in Brussels, are we looking at the threat of a full-blown recession in Europe? And many are wondering if the free fall continues, will the likes of the ECB, the European Central Bank, be put under pressure to act?
Well, yes, the inflation is not sustainable in the sense that it is against all of the economic rules that the central bank is obliged to enforce. Those rules are there because inflation as such is damaging to investment climate. It is politically risky because the population at large is immediately affected and becomes aware of the failure of government to protect their interests. However, inflation is only one side of the current crisis. The other side, which was which was suggested by my fellow panelist, is shortages. And perhaps the more dangerous threat to the economy is not inflation, but shortage. Shortage of energy, meaning the closing of industrial capacity and the idling of workers, which to a certain extent will be compensated by the governments, but otherwise will mean loss of income for swathes of the population. So the crisis that we're seeing now is only, in the remarks, over 9% inflation rate, are only a foretaste of what is to come in a few months, if indeed the Russians hold their delivery of gas through Nord Stream 1 to 20%, or cut it entirely, which is not to be excluded.
David Barkin, Europe's largest economy, Germany, has experienced a period of stagnation this year. Statistics say that the German economy showed 0% growth in the second quarter of 2022. Is the trouble that the EU economic powerhouse Germany facing now also putting its mark on the record inflation across the Eurozone?
Well, obviously, as my colleague in Belgium has just emphasized, the problem of cutting off of gas supplies is tremendously important, but it has to do also not only with the Ukraine situation, but with a more generalized sanctions and the United States' efforts to punish Iran at this particular moment because of its alliances with Israel, further complicating the supply of the energy supplies within the European market. And furthermore, to what extent are the supply chain disruptions that are taking place are going to be allowed to affect the daily lives of the German people? I think that those are the principal questions, and those aren't questions that the European Central Bank can address, but rather they're questions that the geopolitical situation of the European Union is going to have to raise and may involve a confrontation with the United States.
Back to Brussels. Mr. Doctorow, Europe has felt the full force of the aftermath of the sanctions on Russia. How much is Europe losing in all this in comparison to the United States, per se? The conflict is happening on European soil. It's been counterproductive for Europe to impose extreme sanctions on Russia as their economies are so closely linked. What is the cost of all of this for Europe as opposed to the United States?
Well, the United States is largely self-sufficient in energy and is an exporter in certain energy products. So Europe is incomparably weaker in its provision of energy from its own territories. It's far more dependent on imports. 40% of energy imports were coming from Russia, which as a result of the sanctions and the planned cutbacks that Germany and other European nations said publicly in their breastfeeding and showing off how vigilant they were in protection of democracy and the reforms in Ukraine, Europe is paying a very heavy price for this posturing. The United States has been, as I say, spared the worst. However, the very fact that the United States came into the breach to supply its gas, its liquefied natural gas, to Europe and offer it as an alternative and a replacement for Russian supplies has had an impact on the American energy market, namely to greatly increase the domestic prices for gas. The country may be an exporter, but once it is exporting over certain limits, which is now the case, that affects the supply, availability, and pricing of that very same energy to the American consumer. So the situation that we see along all global energy markets comes back and bites the United States, not with the same severity, not with the same political risk as in Europe, but nonetheless, it's also felt there. Let's make plain that the energy crisis, which is now emerging in Europe, is not just an abstract consequence of a war between Russia and Ukraine, nor is it a consequence of Russia's weaponizing its gas deliveries. The political manipulation of energy supplies was initiated by Europe, by Germany in particular, by, as I say, their vocal statements against the continued use of Russian gas, and the Russians have stepped in and said, you don't want it, we won't deliver it. So let's get straight cause and effect. The cause was Europe's imposition of sanctions on Europe on Russian energy supplies. The effect is now beginning to be felt in the alarm across Europe, and Germany in particular, that they will not be able to fill their reserves to the 80% they hoped to reach gas reserves by November 1st, and that they will be dependent through the whole winter on good weather and on the good wishes of the Russians. At the same time, Germany has stood out as being eager to punish Russia. Mr. Scholz said just a week ago that even if Russia concludes a peace treaty with Ukraine, if that treaty enshrines Russia's gains at Ukraine's expense, then Germany will not do anything to lift the sanctions.
Sure.
In this context, it's clear that the Russians are responding in kind.
Okay. David Barkin, on that issue, on the topic that our guest in Brussels just brought up, the EU has run into a serious energy crisis as a result of the face-off with Russia. Do you think Europe chose the correct response to the Ukraine war?
There's a very complex geopolitical situation going on. And while my colleague in Brussels has correctly identified the political decision of the German government with regard to its negotiations or its relationships with Russia, I think that he left out the fact that the Iranian factor is also very, very important. And if energy supplies from alternative sources were mobilized, it would be possible to reduce some of the pressures within the European community. But that doesn't seem, at this particular moment, to be part of the equation. And so I would say that when you ask me, is it the correct response, I think it's a geopolitical question of how much extra European forces are going to influence what is happening within the European community.
Well, talking about that influence, Gilbert Doctorow, did Europe blindly follow the U.S. In its response to Russia and this conflict in Ukraine? Many would say America took the steering wheel and Europe just followed suit without really anticipating the damage of the sanctions on Russia. In terms of Europe, I think it's safe to say that they've already backfired.
Well, there are several factors here. Europe is 27 countries, and some are leaders in the vocal attacks on Russia and calling for stern sanctions, and some are followers. The major powers, France and Germany, are followers. The Baltic states and Poland are leaders in the call for very tough sanctions, which impact not so much them, but impact France, Germany, and the other European states. So we have to differentiate between the European countries here and their interests. That's the United States. Yes, of course, the United States has been a major determinant in European policies. But again, it is not so simple as it may seem. I think that a certain number of European countries were quite alarmed when they saw what Russia was doing and was what it has changed in its policies as this war has gone on in the last several months. They have been alarmed at Russia's military capability, which some of them underestimated or didn't even want to think about. And they have become aware that European NATO members by themselves are totally unprepared for any military conflict with Russia. They have their defense only in the umbrella of the United States. And so if they have been more loyalist than the king, if they have been more stern and tough with Russia on energy, for example, than the United States has been, it is because they are simply scared of Russia knowing their own military inferiority to the Russian forces. Let us note that before this military operation in Ukraine, Western mainstream media were all speaking of China and its military prowess, China and its vast investment in conventional and nuclear arms in the last year or two, in its programs of modernization, and China was all the talk. Now, things have been restored to something resembling reality. The reality is that the second most powerful military force in the world is not China. It is Russia.
David Barkin, what kind of long-term effects are we looking at, not just for Europe, but for the global economy? If you recall, a while back, the World Bank and the U.S. Central Bank warned of the repercussions of the conflict in Ukraine. Bank of America and the Bank of England both increased interest rates, most likely to soften the impact of the conflict. Unpack that for us, please.
Well, I think that it's very, very important what you just said. The raising of interest rates is another one of the economic tools that the central banks have, but it has a direct effect on the cost of living and the job availability of the people in the Western Europe, in the sphere of both of Europe and the United States. Raising interest rates will reduce investment. Raising interest rates will increase costs of living for a great many people in both the United States and in the monetarized credit part of Western Europe or the whole Europe of the 27 countries. Rising interest rates are not going to be a solution for reinvigorating the capitalist economies. And so if you're correctly asking us to look at the wider implications of this, what you're seeing is also a mobilization of capitalist interests to take advantage of this in a rather unfortunate way. It will have a definite impact on reducing economic activity and the dynamics of economic activity in all of the countries we're talking about, but it will also have a direct effect on further tightening the economic screws against perhaps the middle classes in all of these countries.
Gilbert Doctorow, we've been talking about problems. Now let's talk about solutions. What are the solutions, in your opinion, in the short term and in the long run as well?
Well, the solutions in the short term will be the removal, the retirement of Scholz and several other leaders in the EU who are delusional, who are out of touch with reality, and who are leading their nations into the desert. The impact, the economic impact on Germany and on the neighboring countries, which depend on the German vitality of the economy, like Belgium, France as well, the economic condition of these countries is not yet experiencing the effect of the Russian cutoff of gas. That will hit in September and October. If this continues as it is now, Germany will experience a 6% recession. That will have a devastating effect on the whole European economy. So the near-term solution is to remove the incompetent, unprofessional, and ideologically biased leaders who are leading Europe into the desert. Mr. Johnson has gone, Mr. Draghi has gone, and it's about time that Mr. Scholz goes.
All right, and same question to Mr. Barkin before we wrap up the show. What are your thoughts on solutions?
I can't agree more with my colleague in Brussels on one air. There has to be a discussion within all of these countries about how to reset a government impetus to economic activity and social welfare in all of the countries involved. The events in the United States in the past few days, which say that Biden has successfully mobilized the political forces necessary for a new stimulus package that involves both energy, a reset of energy policies, as well as, and this is very, very important, a stimulus for some social welfare measures is extraordinarily important. And I would agree and hope that what happens in the European common market, the European community, and in Great Britain also involves a re-examination of the impact of the way in which government policies up to now have limited economic activity.
All right, apologies.
But I would also hope,
Mr. Barkin, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to jump in there. We're running short of time. Allow me to thank my guests, Professor of Economics at Metropolitan Autonomous University, David Barkin, joining us from Mexico City, and also thanks to independent international affairs analyst Gilbert Doctorow joining us from Brussels, and a special thanks to you, our viewers, for staying with us on tonight.